This is the Medic Cast, August 23rd, 2010.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is the Medic Cast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up! Here's today's show with the pod medic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of the Medic Cast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the show this week. We have a lot of good stuff coming up, including a review of a non-standard EMS medication. We're going to be looking at the medication acetaminophen tonight. A lot of people we know are adding this to their kits as far as EMS providers go. Maryland has added this for specific situations in the EMS setting in their protocols. I know other places do as well. And with the focus this month on community paramedicine, this type of medication and knowledge of this type of medication, I think, is important for all EMS providers to have. So we're going to be looking at acetaminophen a little bit later on after the news segments in this particular episode. In the meantime, I want to remind you that you can find all of the links, information, resource links, show notes links, links to the news stories, all available over at medicast.com/blog. In the MedicCast blog, right there at the top of the page, you'll see a link for show notes. Click that link and it will take you to the page where you'll see the most recent episode listed first and then all of the other episodes listed. Go ahead and check out the episode you're looking for. You can find that there, find the links, follow up on the information that I provide. I always try to give you additional resources to go more in depth. So if the 10 to 15 minute overview and review that I cover here on the show is not enough for you, or you need more information on how to apply what you've learned to your practice, of course, you need to review your own protocols and follow up on those resource links, and then apply according to what your protocols, scope of practice, and other restrictions have to say about how you can take care of your patients in the field. I would also urge you to get back in touch with me. If you'd like to catch up with me by email, send me an email into podmedic@mac.com. You can also call in on the voicemail line, 941-306-3342, 941-30-MEDIC. Call in. Let me know what you have to say. Share your thoughts with the listeners, because I might be able to play your comments here on the show. So it's great to hear from you however you'd like to comment and contact me. If you have a correction or anything else to share, please get in touch with me. I respond back to every email I get. And of course, people contact me on Facebook, facebook.com/podmedic, or the MedicCast fan page over on Facebook, facebook.com/MedicCast. I can go on and on and on. However you can find me, send me an email, a direct message, whatever. I'd love to hear from you. I also want to urge you to be prepared. We're coming up on EMS Expo in just under 2 months, and I'm excited because we are going to be at EMS Expo. So if you're in the region, Dallas area, planning on heading down that way, if you're interested in a free Expo hall pass, get in touch with me, podmedic@mac.com. I have a limited number, but I'd be happy to share them with you. Just make sure you are actually going to attend so that we can keep the limited number of passes I have available and share them with people who are going to actually be there. But if you're going to Dallas and you want to come to the exhibit hall and get a free expo hall pass, I would be happy to share that information with you. So send me an email and put expo hall or exhibit hall pass or something in the subject line, and I will make sure I get back in touch with you with the details until I run out. So I'm looking forward to meeting as many of you as possible. So if you're coming to EMS Expo, find the podcast booth. It's listed under ProMed Network. That's the ProMed Network over at promednetwork.com. That's where we have all of our shows, including this show, the nursing show, a lot of great EMS shows over there and other medical programs. You should check that out. But we will be in the program and you can find us there. We're going to be podcasting live several shows a day, and we're really excited about the opportunity there. So I'm looking forward to seeing as many of you as possible down there. Chris Montero is going to be there, Ted Setla, Justin Shore, Carissa O'Brien, I think Ms. Paramedic and Jeremedic are coming. So we're going to have a whole crew of the EMS podcasting and social media community there, and we want to see you as well. Speaking of contacting me here on the show, I think we'll jump in and take a look at some of the listener email and voicemails right now. Actually, I'll lead off with a voicemail I picked from brand new listener Charles. Actually, brand new viewer Charles. Charles is checking out the show on the Roku box. The Roku box is a set-top box. It basically plugs into your TV in your living room and hooks up to your wireless network or to an Ethernet plug to your cable modem, however the case may be. But it's a way for you to get web video onto your television. So you can watch programs like the Medicast and a ton of other great shows. And the ProMed Network has its own channel on the Roku box. So it's great. I have some new viewers out there who are watching the show in video format. And you should know that the show's also available in audio format to take it with you on the go on an MP3 player or on a CD. And you can download that stuff directly from the site or on iTunes. But Charles was picking up the show and a new viewer, and I thought I'd play his voicemail. He called in on the voicemail line.
Podmedic, I was just watching your latest show and the first segment of it discussing college degrees for paramedics. I've been a paramedic now since 1980, so I'm one of the old guys, and I was trained in a pretty semi-formal type of setting at a university hospital back in that age, and did my most of my clinicals was done in that hospital and in their emergency services. And anyway, I this is Charles in Missouri, by the way. I just wanted to comment and say that not all college degrees really prepare you for being a medic. I mean, college degrees prepare you for life. They don't prepare you for a career. Practical experience, getting out there, getting your hands dirty, learning from, you know, doing the job and watching other experienced medics doing the job and, you know, being mentored by people who know what they're doing is a better, a much more well-rounded education than sitting in a classroom and going through slide presentations and having to read book after book after book. I mean, you know, I've educated myself over the years, and I continuously educate myself, and I'm not a degreed person, and I, you know, while I think it's admirable that someone would want to go after a degree, I don't think that's essential to being a quality paramedic. So you can contact me if you like. My email address.
And we'll go ahead and cut that off. Remember, if you call in on the voicemail line, always leave your email address right at the end, and we'll trim that off. And that way, if I have a comment or question, I can email you back and get clarification. But Charles, thank you very much for taking the time, a brand new viewer of the show, and calling in on the voicemail line right away. And it's great to hear from you. I agree that you don't have to have a degree to be a great paramedic. I think that to advance the profession, we need to move in that direction, however, because that is what's going to be required of by the rest of the medical profession to view us as medical professionals. If we want to move up and improve the salary aspects of what we do and improve the way we are viewed by the rest of the medical establishment, we need to advance the career in terms of professional training. And that professional training level in the medical community is determined by the degree. I agree with you, doesn't make you a great care provider, and the extraneous classes associated with the degree are really more to prepare you for life. But honestly, critical thinking, being able to be more prepared for different scenarios and situations, having a broader experience in what's going on in the world around you and historically, all, I think, contribute to making you a better paramedic. And so that's I think, the direction that we'll need to head if we want to continue to build the EMS profession, which is very young, really. I think that a lot of us want to see change overnight, and it's come very far. It has a long way to go, but I think we can do that. And I think part of that is going to be moving in the direction of at least requiring degrees or requiring some accredited training, which is what the National Registry is moving to do. Charles, it's great to hear from you. I know you've been commenting a lot over on the Facebook fan page, and it's just always fantastic to hear from you. So I urge you to continue to stay in touch, share your thoughts and views. I really value the opinion of you and other viewers and listeners out there. So please keep in touch. I got another email in. Let me just check on my screen here. And I heard from listener Harry. Harry is another, I think, recent or more recent listener or viewer of the show. Harry is a former EMS blogger and has decided to come back and had some questions about maybe starting a podcast or actually opening up his EMS blog. He was concerned by some of the things that he saw related to Mark Glencourse leaving blogging. And was this something that, if he got started, it was going to cause some problems with his employer? Part of the issue is, I think, Harry, is that I can't answer that for you. You know your employer better than I do. I would like to think that employers won't have knee-jerk reactions to things like social media. However, we all know that they do. I think that if you have a good relationship with your supervisors and the people in the upper chains of management in your employer's system, that you would contact them and say, this is what my experience has been, this is what I'd like to do. I don't have to share exactly where I work or who I work for, but I would like to reach out and become part of this social media community. And that could be one way to approach that and spell out for them so that they understand what it is you're doing and how you plan on conducting yourself professionally and dealing with patient confidentiality and things like that. Upfront is a way to go. Of course, there are those who will say it's easier to beg for forgiveness than to ask permission. There's something to be said for that too. So you really have to know what your employer is willing to put up with and what their stand has been in the past. But I'd like to see more and more employers moving forward in social media and training. And so this is something that I think that we could all stand to benefit by bringing more of us into this online conversation where we share our broader experiences to the entire group. And we share experiences within our own systems, but that doesn't solve problems that might be unique to those systems. So it's great to see opportunities to share information online via podcasts, via blogs, via Facebook and other social media avenues, because a problem you have in your system may have been solved in the UK or France or in another state, or in Australia or New Zealand. Any of these places could have had a similar problem, because one thing I've found by doing this show for the last 5 years is that when I talk to people around the country and internationally, patient care is patient care is patient care. We all deal with very similar problems and very similar challenges. And so one person's solution in another part of the world may be very viable for adding to your system. And that's one of the benefits I see social media having. So Harry, thanks a lot for checking in with me. Harry is going to be looking at becoming maybe the new minion, the helper for the brand new This Week in EMS show. So if you're watching or listening to this, in about a week, we're going to be releasing a brand new show. Chris Montero of the EMS Garage and I are going to be doing a short news commentary once a week on some topic or news item that came up during that week. It'll be brief, 5, maybe 10 minutes tops, where we're just going to be chatting and having a little bit of fun, but also talking about a single news item or article or issue and providing our take on it and putting it out there for you to comment back on. And that'll be at thisweekinems.com. I think it's going to be TWIEMS.com as well. But be ready for that. I'll announce it. I'll send something out in the show notes and the newsletter. So if you haven't signed up for the Medicast newsletter, go ahead and do that. You'll find a sign up on the Facebook page as well as over on the front page at medicast.com/blog. And Harry, thanks a lot for checking in. One more email to check out before we head out. And that email is from listener Donna. Donna checked in because she had gotten a link in an email she signed up for, an email newsletter that I produce and signed up for, and one of the links wasn't working, because when you sign up for the newsletter, I often include some free extras or something, links to some additional materials and resources as somebody who's just signed up, and she found that the links were broken. Well, I want to thank her, first of all, for letting me know that the links were broken. But it pointed out to me that, you know, I know that I have a big site and a lot of things. I've been doing this for 5 years. I have nearly 1,000 posts and articles posted up on the Medicast site. Obviously, links go away, links change. Sometimes the sites that are linking to are different and have changed their link structure so that the links I have on the site don't work anymore. If you find a page that has a broken link on it, please shoot me an email, podmedic@mac.com, and send me a link to the URL of that page and tell me what's broken on it, because I really need your help. This is something, as my site gets older and older and older, there are going to be more and more of these types of problems. And of course, the same goes for the newsletter. I hadn't changed that, you know, beginner welcome to the newsletter email that you get when you sign up for a long time, and I hadn't realized that some of those links had changed. Or, in fact, one of the links she asked about was a link of mine that I had changed and hadn't realized that I had linked to it in that email. So if you find something like that, either in an email from me, something doesn't work, don't assume it's just your computer. It may be, and I can maybe help troubleshoot it for you, but ultimately, I want to make sure that this information is available for everyone, and don't assume that somebody else has the problem and sent an email already, because quite often, I think for every person that sends me an email about an issue, there are 10 people that walk away shaking their heads, and I'd like to not have that happen. I'd like to be able to make this information available to everyone as often as possible. So Donna, thanks for sending me your email and telling me that there was a problem, and I hope that this will help encourage others to talk about and let me know about things that are going on the site as well, because it helps. Basically, what you see is what you got. There's not a huge corporation behind me here, and I have my son helping me out a little bit and another couple of other folks helping me out, but ultimately, it's me running the show, and I can use all the help I can get. Ask my wife. Time now for this week's news segments, and let's jump on in with the first news item here. This is a news item about smart stem cells regrowing, regenerating cardiac tissue. Now, this has been like the holy grail, and it looks like we're just one step closer to getting this taken care of. And what does this mean for us? Does this mean that STEMI protocols are going away? Does it mean that we are going to change the way we deal with cardiac illness? Well, not necessarily. But what it does mean is that if our patients can grow back cardiac tissue and regenerate cardiac tissue when they have signs of coronary artery disease and MI that has caused cardiac ischemia in part of their heart, if we can aggressively treat those patients, then get them to the appropriate cardiac center, that patient could be down the road when this therapy becomes available and widespread, that patient could regrow that portion of their heart. But I think one of the key things that's going to be required from us and from other emergency providers is to be aggressive in our care and understanding that indeed time is muscle. The more cardiac function we can preserve now, the less recovery time they're going to have, the more closely they're going to return to a full function of their cardiac environment. And in the cases of the future advances like this stem cell research, when the patient's own stem cells could be tweaked so that they can provide cardiac regenerative properties and actually regrow ischemic tissue, we have the opportunity to, by preserving as much cardiac function early, we have an opportunity to bring our patients way back from beyond the brink and have just an amazing after-event lifestyle and just overall health. So I always like looking at these futuristic looks and these new technologies that are out there. Are we going to be doing this in the field? Probably not. I don't think so in any time in the near future, unless it becomes something you just inject into them, which, hey, wouldn't that be cool? But still, it is important for us to focus on the basics. And the basics in cases of cardiac arrest, in cases of acute coronary syndrome, is that we have to be aggressive in our treatments. We need to remember that time is muscle, that the more we can do to aggressively treat that patient and rapidly transport them to the appropriate facility, the more cardiac function will be preserved and they will be able to live long enough to take benefit of new treatments like this one. And I'm very excited by this. So if you haven't seen this article or you've seen something like it, you know, check out the link in the show notes in this episode's show notes, and you can follow up on this particular article yourself. I'm very excited by technologies like this, and I look forward to hearing back from you. What do you think? Do you think we might someday be, I don't know, doing some kind of a stem cell injection during the midst of a cardiac event so that that regenerative cardiac healing begins almost immediately? There's your first line cardiac drug. I mean, that's pretty amazing. Let me know. I'd love to hear back from you. Call in on the voicemail line or leave me a message on the email, and I'd love to hear from you. Next up in the articles for today is an article about nasty people. Do you guys have nasty people on your ambulance? Do you have patients that are not very pleasant to ride with to the hospital? How do you deal with that? And why is it important for you to understand some things about nasty people? Well, a recent study that was conducted in Italy found that people who are considered unpleasant or nasty or mean are more prone to heart attack and stroke, that the arteries, the walls of the arteries in these people are thicker than non-nasty people. And this may be because they maintain themselves at such high stress levels that they end up building up a huge amount of enzymes in their system that cause the cardiac artery walls to thicken. But if you're more likely to have a stroke or a heart attack because of being a mean person, what happens when you get in the back of my ambulance and you're still mean and nasty? Well, here's what I take away from this. And actually, I talked with Chris Montero about this very topic on our brand new episode This Week in EMS, which will be coming up, as I said, in about a week. We record those ahead of time, and we're going to edit them. They're going to be video, so you'll be able to get a chance to watch those on the site and over at ProMed Network. And, of course, we'll have that available on the Roku box eventually as well. But what does this mean for you, the EMS provider? Well, I know a lot of guys in my system who love to bait people like that. Whether they're drunks, whether they're just mean and nasty people, whether they think they're entitled to something. This is where the whole idea of, I don't want to say customer service because they aren't customers, they're patients, but quality medical care comes into play. And part of quality medical care is you help the patient and treat the patient and focus on the patient. And it's not about whether they're insulting you or not. It's about getting the job done and treating the patient. And according to this study in Italy, these patients are at a much greater risk for stroke and heart attack. So do you want to amp them up and make them more at risk? Or do you want to do what you can to alleviate their anxiety, to calm them down, and to help mellow the situation, right? So you just kind of get mellow, right? That's what I'm trying to get from this, and hopefully you'll see that as well. I don't know if that's what you take from articles like this, but certainly, you know, it doesn't do any good to argue with somebody. You're not going to win this argument. You're not going to get anywhere. Putting them in their place is not going to make you feel better for any appreciable length of time, and is it really worth it to give that guy a stroke or a heart attack because you decided to yell back? So it's something to keep in mind. Obviously, these people could use an attitude adjustment, but the back of the ambulance is not a place for personality adjustment in the field. Finally, last article here is a recent headline, and these types of alarming headlines, medical news that come out in the mainstream media really alarm a lot of patients and make them change the way they're handling a medical problem when in reality, they shouldn't be making adjustments based on something they read on the web or in the newspaper. And this is an article called Acetaminophen Teen Asthma Trigger. Okay, there was a study that was conducted, and in that study, they looked at 323,000 teenagers from 50 nations and examined those patients that had a history of asthma and some of the related situations that caused them to have an asthma attack, and they found a correlation between acetaminophen and having more increased prevalence of asthma attacks based on this study. The authors of the study are very quick to point out that this is merely an initial look at this what might be a problem, that this calls for a directed actual clinical trial with double blind and everything about research that we need to do to make good research work. But my take on this is that our patients have read this, and now they're going to stop taking Tylenol, even though their doctor said that's the pain management they should use. And they start taking something else that maybe not as good for them. So it behooves us as medical professionals to go ahead and make sure that our patients have answers to questions they have about things like this. You don't have to know everything about it, but you can do some education about how to read these articles critically. First off, a lot of them don't read the article. They look at the headline and they stop using acetaminophen, right? Well, they didn't read the article. If they read the article, if they got all the way to the end of the article says, we're not saying that acetaminophen should be discontinued. This is a safe and effective drug. We are merely saying that for certain patient populations, you should talk to your medical professionals about whether Tylenol is the most appropriate medication for you, which basically says, talk to your doctor. All right? So we can educate our patients about that regarding any of these alarming headline stories that show up from time to time based on a recent study that was released. And the newspapers and the websites are in the business of getting people to read what they have to say, or at least come to their site or buy their newspaper. And so putting an alarming, frightening headline on there will make parents buy this newspaper or read this article, or at least look at the headline because, hey, I have a teenager. I don't want them to have asthma. Acetaminophen might give my teenager asthma? No, that's not true. That is absolutely not true. What it is saying is that there's a correlation and more study is needed, but you need to read the whole article to find that out. So encourage your patients for a couple of things. When they get a story like this, talk to a medical professional about it. When they get a story like this, they should definitely not just read the headline or even the first paragraph. They should read the whole article and try to get a sense of what the researchers are actually saying, and then talk to a medical professional. And when in doubt, check in with you, because we are some people's first contact with medical care. And you, as the responsible professional, can say, hey, have you talked to your doctor? Well, maybe when we get to the ER, we can make sure we tell the nurse to talk to you about this a little bit. And they can look it up or find the information for you or refer you to the ER physician. These are the things you can do, whether it's this article or any article, to make sure that your patients are getting the best possible information about what's going on with their health and not reacting to every little health alert that comes down the pike. They should be checking with their medical providers to get that information. Time now for this week's tip and trick of the week. And as I said earlier, we're going to do a quick review of the medication acetaminophen, a common drug. A lot of our patients have it in their medicine cabinet, and actually in a lot of places they may not even know they have it. So we're going to do a brief review because you may be carrying this in your kits now. And if not, maybe if you move into a more community paramedicine role, it may be something that shows up in your protocols in the future. So I wanted you to be more aware of some things about acetaminophen. So this video segment, we're going to be talking about acetaminophen and the fact that a lot of our patients are needing to take a medication like acetaminophen for mild pain relief, for a fever. They may have taken it as part of a cough and cold medication and are not aware that acetaminophen actually is in the medication they're talking about. So we need to find out a couple of things about this drug. First off, we need to know that acetaminophen is actually the generic name. It's also known as Tylenol, the brand name, and you should be aware of both of those. You should also be able to show a patient acetaminophen on a label so they can be prepared to read that and maybe find it in other locations. We're going to look a little bit at the mechanism of action. We'll also talk about the common uses, routes, and doses of acetaminophen and nursing considerations. These are things that I think you should be aware of with regards to some of the things that nurses think about with their patients. And I think you as EMS providers should be aware of these things as well. So we'll call these provider considerations. And additional resources, some additional things you can look into regarding acetaminophen. First off, the mechanism of action. Acetaminophen works by inhibiting prostaglandin production. What's prostaglandin? Well, it basically is a moderator in the central nervous system for pain and for fever and heat management. So if you have something that affects this particular drug or chemical in the body, it will cause the body's pain mechanism to work differently. So it raises the pain threshold so that you may have the same amount of pain, but your perception of it is that the pain is not as great. And so that's why it's best for mild pain. It's not going to handle somebody with a broken leg, that's freshly broken. They need stronger pain management. But for somebody that's got a headache or a dull ache from something or whatever, this might be a good choice for them in pain management. It'll also decrease your fever by moderating the heat centers in the brain, the heat control centers in the brain. And so it actually brings the temperature, body temperature down. Central nervous system effects are how this works. So there's no anti-inflammatory. It doesn't actually work on the point of inflammation in the body. So if you have a patient with lower back pain, for instance, this may not be the best medication to manage their pain if that pain's related to muscle spasms, inflammatory problems. Sports injuries are not going to necessarily be best treated for pain by this. They might need some anti-inflammatory effects, and that would be a medication like ibuprofen or something like that. But you should understand that this is how this medication works. It doesn't treat the inflammation that might be causing the pain. So you have to kind of understand that it works a little bit differently. There are very few, if any, gastrointestinal side effects. And the benefit of that is a lot of the anti-inflammatories medications out there are a little hard on the GI system. And for some people, may over time cause GI bleeds. So if you have a history of GI bleeds, if you're on blood thinners, there's a lot of things that may preclude you from making your average non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug the best choice for pain management. And so Tylenol or acetaminophen would be a better choice because it doesn't have those GI side effects. What about indications and routes of administration? Well, the indications are going to be as analgesic or antipyretic, and fever control or mild pain management. There are many ways, only two ways to get this drug into the system. It's not going to be injectable. It's going to be taken by mouth, there are also rectal versions of this drug. I don't expect that we'll probably have suppositories, Tylenol suppositories on the ambulance. But they do exist, and you may find them in a patient's home. And you should recognize that, oh, wow, that's a really strange big pill. It's not a pill. It's a suppository. And you should recognize it and understand that's what that's for. Patient may have that prescribed because they can't take medications by mouth because of perhaps a disease state or something like that. Preparations include liquids, chewable tablets, standard tablets, capsules, gel caps, however the different medication and drug companies produce it. But you should be aware that this particular medication comes in a lot of different forms, and you should be able to read the label and identify what the medication is. For adults, the standard dosing is 325 to 650 milligrams every 4 to 6 hours. For children, 10 to 20 milligrams per kilogram every 4 to 6 hours. Those are the standard doses. Your patient might be on something different. And it's important to understand some things related to this dosing, because Tylenol is very likely to cause issues with the patient with liver toxicity or other problems. So some provider considerations to keep in mind. Patients who overdose on Tylenol, either intentionally or unintentionally, are in for a nasty surprise, because first of all, it doesn't cause many side effects in the near term at all. They'll have little or no idea that they're having anything going on. So if you have somebody who took a lot of drugs in the first pill bottle they found, and that pill bottle was Tylenol, and now they turn around and decide, well, I don't want to let anybody know that I was doing that or trying to kill myself. So they don't tell anybody because they don't have any side effects. Problem is, 24 hours later, their liver starts to shut down. So there is an antidote to that, but you need to make sure that it's coming along and that it's available. But you need to identify that there's a problem. So you need to make sure that you take care of that. patients with a good history behind them, you need to get that. You need to go in there and find out what's going on with them. Patients with a history of poor nutrition or alcoholism are going to have some issues with their liver and metabolism, and that can cause problems when taking something like acetaminophen. So you should identify those patients and understand that if that's something they've taken, there may be a problem going on. If they have a risk for hepatic failure and you have the ability to look at their chart, you want to look at their liver and kidney function labs. And you'll be able to see most patient charts with their lab values in there will tell you whether they're high or low and what the normals are. So look at them if you get a chance to. If you're taking a patient on a routine transport and you know they've got a renal failure or they've got hepatic failure or hepatitis, look at the labs that are in there and get a sense of what those labs are supposed to look like. It's important to also understand that if a patient's been taking a lot of Tylenol, not necessarily an overdose, but maybe standard dosing over a couple of days, it may alter the AccuCheck readings, their blood sugar readings, depending on the device. So depending on what device you have in your ambulances, you should read the accompanying material about them and make sure that they may not get a false high or low reading because of Tylenol use. Understand that. And of course, the patient's own monitoring devices may be giving them a false reading and having them inappropriately manage their diabetes. So understand and find out what drugs the patient has been taking, not just immediately, but over the last few days, because you may get a false reading on an AccuCheck. Not all of them. It's device specific, but it did come up in one of the articles I looked at for this particular segment, and I wanted to make sure you knew about it. Also, make sure you understand that many over-the-counter cough, cold, allergy medications contain acetaminophen to manage the fever and the general achiness associated with those illnesses. And so that's included along with your antihistamine and your cough suppressant and everything else. And so a patient may take a drug not realizing that, this cough and cold medication has acetaminophen in it, and then they go and they take acetaminophen on top of it because they're achy, not realizing that they've now double dosed themselves. So it's a common occurrence. It's one of the reasons that pediatric cough and cold medications are coming off the market for the very young, because they're just too easy to overdose children on acetaminophen using those medications. There are also some combination prescription drugs out there that you may find. Tylenol 3 has codeine in it, as well as acetaminophen. You can also find medications such as Percocet, which have a combination of strong pain reliever plus acetaminophen in it. Understand that these drugs are combination drugs, and a patient may not recognize that and may double up and take more than one different kind of drug, and you may have a Tylenol overdose or toxicity situation going on, so that you can report that information to the poison center and also to the local ER. So if you're not sure, call the poison center and they'll be able to tell them what drug you have. They'll tell you if that combination drug is causing an issue for that patient and a cause for alarm for acetaminophen toxicity. I have a link in the show notes as well for the article, a recent episode about a year or so ago with Lisa Booz from the Maryland Poison Center, and she was talking specifically about acetaminophen overdoses. And of course, there is an antidote for it if given within an appropriate time frame called acetylcysteine. Has very specific treatment factors, has to be administered in the hospital. It's a drip, and the patient needs to get that managed and monitored appropriately. But the poison center will help the local ER out with that. So contacting the poison center early and telling them where you're going, they can follow up with the ER and make sure the patient's being treated appropriately. I have some links to some additional resources here. The Maryland Poison Center is one of our good partners here on the show, and Lisa Booz is on the show frequently, but you may have heard this. I'll say it again. 1-800-222-1222 is the Poison Center number for the United States, and I've heard most of North America, although some friends in Canada have told me that there's a different Poison Center number where they are, so I'm not sure, but I know this is the number here in the United States. Also, the recent Tox Tidbit segment with Lisa Booz will be linked in the show notes, so I would urge you to check out that episode if you want to hear more about acetaminophen and some of the dangers of overdosing and some of the things to look for and think about. That's in that article as well. And contact your local pharmacist or pharmacy if you want some more information about which medications contain this. Maybe you can even get the pharmacist to come and do a community outreach meeting about this particular problem in your community. It's a great way for them to get out in the community and promote their business. They are a pharmacist and in business to do that, to have people come and buy things from them. But you can also have them help provide a service either that way, or maybe provide an education session for your providers about the hidden aspects of acetaminophen and very common medications. Finally, there's a great link I found, TylenolProfessional.com. It's a link specifically at the Tylenol site for medical professionals with some educational materials meant for patient handouts, but great educational materials for you as well. And you can check out all those links. And I have those links in the show notes. So when you find the links, you can go ahead and follow up on them. And I urge you to do so. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. I want to thank everybody for checking out the show this week. And I want to remind you again that all of the information covered in this episode and every other episode are linked to in the show notes so that you can find additional resources, links to all the news items and everything else over at the show notes page on the MedicCast for this episode. And that's at MedicCast.com/blog. And then you'll find the show notes link right at the top of the page. Go ahead and click that link and find this episode and all the other episodes listed there. Of course, you'll also find other articles and information posted throughout the course of each week over at the MedicCast blog, so I urge you to check back there often. You'll also find a link there to sign up for the MedicCast newsletter. We send you a link, send you all the show notes, links, and everything each week as an episode is published, as well as other information occasionally throughout the course of the month. We don't spam you, but you probably can expect to get one, maybe two emails a week from that newsletter. It's a great way to stay in touch with me here at the MedicCast, find out what's going on right directly in your email box. And then if you want to share a particular episode, you've got the link right there to go ahead and send to somebody. Let that episode link go out to whoever you'd like to send it to and get the episodes shared that way. I'd like to remind everybody, if you'd like to get back in touch with me, you can leave a comment on any of the episode links or any of the episode articles over at the blog. Of course, you can also send me an email, podmedic@mac.com, or shoot me a voicemail, just like Charles did in this episode earlier. And that voicemail number, again, is 941-306-3342, 941-30-MEDIC. Follow me on Facebook and Twitter under the handle PodMedic, and of course, become a fan of the MedicCast fan page. That's facebook.com/MedicCast. You'll find links to all of the stuff over there on the front page of the MedicCast blog as well. But I want to urge you to become a fan of the MedicCast on the Facebook fan page. Just go to that page and click the like button at the top of the page and you'll be linked in. And anything I post over there just for the fans, you'll get to your Facebook page and you'll be able to link back and check on that. I will close out the show, as I always do, with some great PodSafe music. In this week's episode, we will be closing out with a song by Johanna Staley. Johanna is a longtime supplier of great independent music here to the show and other podcasts, and I want to make sure that you check out the links to her music. Let her know you heard it here on the MedicCast, and you'll also find a link to the iTunes store. So if you like Johanna's music, go ahead and share that music with your friends and other people you know, and go ahead and purchase one of the songs. It's a great way to show your support for $1, $1.29. Just pick up a song and support an independent artist who's sharing her music with podcast listeners like you. That's it for me. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. I'll be back again with another episode every week, Sunday night, Monday morning, ready for your work week in EMS. In the meantime, don't forget, scene safety, BSI.
Take that, I take it back, you can hold me down, but I can't relax. I mislead you, and start it all again. Here I come, on the run, I went too far, now look what I've done. I wanna save the world, but I can't save myself, cause I'm not perfect. But I get to always known, under the surface, of all these untouched zones. I'm not perfect, no matter how I try.
correct.